Our reading today was written by my friend and colleague, Linda Susan Ulrich. She is one of the ministers at our congregation in Ann Arbor, Michigan. It's titled, My Tender Places Are a Source of Strength. Many years ago, I spent a week visiting a musician friend of mine in Brooklyn. Alex and I had started a recording project together before he and his family moved away from San Francisco. So I took vacation time and flew across the country to wrap things up. While his wife went to her job and his then 5-year-old son was at school, we'd lay down missing percussion tracks, listen carefully to the vocals, and finalize the last details before mixing started. He and I always wind up laughing hysterically together, so the week also reminded me of why he's among my very favorite people. On one of my last nights, all four of us ate dinner together. The food was delicious and the conversation lively. I felt again how much I'd missed them. Then, out of the blue, the 5-year-old turned to me and said, matter-of-factly, "You're fat." There was an astonished silence. His parents quickly admonished him to apologize. Time slowed down. In the brief space between his statement and my reply, I remembered everything I'd endured around my weight. Peers at school who would moo at me in the hallways or tell me I had my own gravitational field. People who acted insulted at the notion that I might have a crush on them. The constant diets my mother imposed. Doctors who could see nothing else about me. Internalized self-hatred that led me, among other things, to refuse graham crackers in kindergarten because they had too many calories. This little boy's words touched old, tender wounds. But this time, I took a breath and decided to try something different. "That's right," I said. "I am fat, just like your dad is tall, and you're short, and your mom has red hair. Isn't it cool how bodies come in all sorts of shapes and sizes?" Alex and his wife immediately picked up on what I was doing and chimed in with other examples. By reclaiming the word fat as an adjective rather than an accusation, I didn't just teach a kindergartner about the beautiful variations among human bodies. I reminded myself that my tender places are a source of strength, and that the tigers are no longer in the grass. Spirit of compassion, help us draw strength from all that we are. Give us new language with which to claim our wholeness, a new litany of joy built out of words that wounded. Journey with us as we strive to open our hearts wider until we hold everyone with compassion, including ourselves. Amen, and blessed be.
Thank you.
things I've loved about most of my children's stages of growth and development, but I think my favorite so far happened around 3 or 4 months. That's around the time that babies start to discover that they have a body. As newborns, and for the first couple of months, babies' movements are more instinctual than anything else. They root their precious little heads when they're hungry. They kick their legs when their bellies hurt. They jerk their arms around when they aren't tightly swaddled. But when they get to 3 or 4 months or so, most start to notice their bodies with a newfound awareness. I noticed this start to happen with my babies when they became aware of their hands. They'd hold their hands up and wiggle their fingers and ball them into a fist over and over and over again, marveling at their newfound ability to control what this part of their body was doing. And that's just the beginning of the joy and pleasure that our bodies can give us. I remember how much joy I got as a child playing kickball with my friends on the schoolyard or seeing how far I could hit a baseball. As a Girl Scout, I used to go backpacking with my troop, and I relished the physical satisfaction of hiking several miles in the snow, pitching my tent, and waking up in the morning deliciously warm inside of my mummy sleeping bag, breathing in that cold, crisp air I could see in front of my face when I opened my eyes. Things like enjoying a delicious meal, a refreshing swim on a hot day, a massage, the sensation of all those endorphins flooding our brains after a hard workout, and of course, the pleasure of lovemaking, are all joys of the body. And these joys of the body are something to celebrate, something that is holy, something that deserves our thanks and our praise. Unfortunately, our bodies don't just make us feel good, do they? They can also be a source of pain, of suffering, even of denial. I think of my eldest uncle who lost his hearing in one ear. He'd been on assignment as a photojournalist in Vietnam and had been next to an explosion of some kind when it happened. He is an opera fanatic, and he grieves that he can no longer fully hear the music that he loves so much. I think of when my oldest child was born. I'd spent my pregnancy building trust in my body that it knew how to have a baby. So looking back, I'm not that surprised that my experience wound up being traumatic, not only because my labor lasted 35 hours and ended in an emergency C-section, but because at that time, it felt like my body had failed me. Our bodies are amazing, but it is a humbling experience indeed to be faced with their limits. It can be especially hard when our bodies don't match up to society's standards for beauty or health, strength or virility, or any number of other socially and culturally constructed ideas. And even if we want to conform to one of those constructs, mind cannot always prevail over matter. Our bodies do not and cannot always bend to our wills, and that can be very disappointing. For many of us, that disappointment is often centered around weight or how our bodies look. Our reading today told of how my friend and colleague, the Reverend Linda Susan Ulrich, came to transform the wounds she received from unkind people and a rigid and sexist culture into places of strength. Likewise, Eve Ensler, who's best known for the Vagina Monologues, later wrote a play about body image called The Good Body. She wrote the play because she discovered that the discontent she had worked through in writing and producing the Vagina Monologues had simply traveled up from her vagina to her stomach. She writes, "In the midst of a war on Iraq, in a time of torture camps and daily bombings, when civil liberties are disappearing as fast as the ozone layer, When one out of three women in the world will be beaten or raped in her lifetime, why write a play about my stomach? Maybe because my stomach is one thing I feel I have control over, or maybe because I've hoped that my stomach is something I could get control over. Maybe because I see how my stomach has come to occupy my attention. I see how other women's stomachs or butts or thighs or hair or skin have come to occupy their attention so that we have very little left for the war on Iraq. Or much else, for that matter. When a group of ethnically diverse, economically disadvantaged women in the United States was recently asked about the one thing that they would change in their lives if they could, the majority of these women said that they would lose weight. Many of us have wished we could change things about our bodies, myself included. Weight, size, shape, the presence of hair in some places, the lack of hair in other places. Some of us have wished we could change other things about our bodies, like the things about our body that pain us or make us sick. I know many here today who have experienced the feeling of being invaded by an illness or a tumor. There is a sense of betrayal. It can feel like our bodies have turned against us, whether it's a faulty gallbladder or appendix or one of the many diseases that convince our immune systems to attack us. My first year in seminary, I contracted meningitis and became deathly ill. I remember feeling physically awful and also feeling pretty dismayed that I could control blinking my eyes and moving my arm and singing with my vocal cords, but I couldn't take control over my immune system to fight the illness within me. It seemed absurd. It was the first time in my life I'd really had to grapple with my mortality and that my existence is truly and wholly, in an important way, at the mercy of my body. People with chronic illness grapple with this reality every day, while others have the privilege of bodies that allow us to not have to think about it very often. Work, paying our bills, keeping our homes, cooking our dinners, loving our children and partners, and building justice take a lot of our attention. But then one morning we may wake up and see our reflection in the mirror and think, this isn't the me I remember. It can be hard to reconcile the person we've always been since we were a tiny child with the aging body we inhabit. We may feel like the person we are on the outside doesn't match up with the person we are on the inside. For those of us who are trans or genderqueer or non-binary, there can be added layers to feeling like one's insides don't match our outsides. Anytime our experience of our body is different than we wish can be difficult. And when others experience us as different than we know ourselves to be, it can be deeply painful. Our bodies are precious. They are beautiful in their uniqueness, and they are imperfect. These bodies we are born into are the vessels that carry us through our entire lives, and one day they will carry us out of it. They are our closest and constant companions, and while sometimes and in some ways we can control them, train them, sculpt them, there are a lot of things about them that are beyond our control. They get sick, and sometimes those sicknesses aren't the kind that go away. And one day, in the end, our bodies will stop working, and we will die. In a book by Tony Bernard called How to Be Sick, I read a story about a Buddhist teacher who offered this wisdom about the mortality of the body. You say, "Don't break my glass." Can you prevent something that's breakable from breaking? It will break sooner or later. If you don't break it, someone else will. If someone else doesn't break it, one of the chickens will. Penetrating the truth of these things, we see that this glass is already broken. Though our last day of life has not yet happened, it will happen. When our hand slips one day and we notice the glass beginning to break, we can let it go because we knew it was broken all along. This makes the glass of our lives more precious, not less so. It helps us to cherish the pleasure and activities our bodies allow until such time as our limits no longer allow them. You may remember last week during worship, Reverend Christian told the story of a Western archaeologist who hired a team of men native to the area he wished to excavate. The terrain meant they had to hike rather than drive to the digging site, and the journey was a long one. After a few hours and without any explanation, the men stopped hiking and sat down. After what seemed like an interminably long time, they finally began to gather their things and set off again. The archaeologist then asked the men why they had stopped, and they replied, "We had to let our souls catch up to our bodies." The terrain of our years, navigating the fullness of what life has to offer, can be wonderful, but it can also be both long and harsh at times. So I think we need to make space for, in a manner of speaking, letting our souls catch up to our bodies. Throughout our lives, our bodies can give us pleasure. They can help us achieve our dreams and goals. They can make us marvel at their strength and beauty, but they can also cause us disappointment and pain. As we journey through our lives, even as our bodies experience illness and disease and change as we age, they are our constant companions, our closest partners on the journey of life. They will not last forever. There is an expiration date on every ability, every skill, every source of pleasure and pain. And it is that very finitude, that very mortality, that makes this one life we've been given so precious. My prayer for all of us today is that we come to marvel at the wonder that is our bodies, giving thanks for the joys and pleasures they've given us, developing compassion for the aspects of our bodies and ourselves that we wish were different, giving thanks for the ways our tender places can become for us and others sources of strength. As Erica Hewitt, author of our Chalice Writing Words, writes, "These bodies, these blessings, bring the world to life through seeing, taste, hearing, scent, and touch. May we bring to our intricately woven bodies a sense of sacred caretaking." May it be so.